You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Can only come from you. Ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna
people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me.
People. You gotta take a look at yourself. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity. Because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not, and it has to get done, it must be done, and it will get done because you will do it. And you'll do it safely. That's right. Because that stuff is still out there. A new variant is supposed to be coming up, you know. But once again, I'm not advocating on anything. What I'm advocating on is health. Eating right, vitamin D, vitamin B, you know, making sure you take precautions. You still wear a mask, when, particularly in public. You still keep your distance. You still keep your damn hands clean. So we got to do whatever we got to do. But if that's your choice to do that, then that's what you do, you know. And if all your family members want to do that, that's what they do. But I'm not saying yay or nay on it, you know. It's a lot of stuff out there. I did do a program, I think, I'm quite sure it was last year. Brother made a good point about vitamin D and about these viruses and about the vaccine, how it was developed. It's a synthetic vaccine. But don't want to get off into that. Let's get off into this program today, because it's going to be a good program today. My guest will be Brother Mickey Dean of the National Black United Front out of Kansas City, Missouri, who posted something that I just felt was needed to be talked about and brought to your attention. So we're going to do that. Once again, this program is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. When you go to archives, you'll see at the top of the page, podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And then there will be programs that are dated and titled, thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Appreciate that. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. This program, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times they're going to give our Eastern times on Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. That's followed by from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. Following that, from 9 p.m. to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. And then on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Wednesdays. 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. That's right. Time for an Awakening on Fridays from 8 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Elders Council. And on Sunday, once again, Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. on Sunday with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Check it out, brothers and sisters. These products are produced by us. In fact, I've seen a piece on Facebook. There's free delivery if you spend so much. So check it out, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the African. Africa for the Africans. Brother Imani Tayemba is back. I haven't called him yet, but I will soon because I want to get him on the program to talk about the latest trip that to Ghana, as well as the upcoming tours he has. The next tour, he may even develop one prior to this because this is not until November, November 18th through the 29th. And I still want to be on it. I got to get my act together, get my money down, because I want to go to Tanzania. I know you're Tanzania, but they say it pronounces Tanzania. So I want to go November 18th through the 29th, and the cost is $3,700. And the next trip after that is December 24th to January 5th, 2022, to Ghana. Spend a holiday time in Ghana. And then April 1st to April 11th, 2022, to Senegal and Gambia. That he takes every year on his time, around that time. And once again, all of these trips are $3,700. Put a $400 deposit down, pay on it monthly or biweekly, whatever hell you can do, whatever you can do, do that. And you'll be going on a trip of a lifetime. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. If you want to see videos of previous, pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. Or give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Everything you need to make it a trip of a lifetime is on that website. So just check it out. Baba Rinoco, Dr. Rinoco Rashidi. He has a webinar coming up. June 25th, Friday, June 25th, 8 p.m. Eastern to 9:30 p.m. And then Saturday, June 26th, 11 a.m. Eastern to 12:30 Eastern. The African Star over Europe. And that's Africa's influence, Africa's presence in Europe, early Europe. He's documenting the African presence around the world. So you got to give Baba Rinoco much love, much respect. He has a trip upcoming July 18th through August 3rd to Ghana with Professor Small and Dr. Lynn Jeffries. That's July 18th to August 3rd. He'll be leaving from there, going to Kemet, July 31st to August 13th. He'll be leading a tour in Kemet. He'll be leading a tour in Kemet. I think both of those are, 4,200. I need to get that information. I can get that information because I need to say to that. I've been saying, yeah, I think that's what it is. No, I need to know what it is. You know what I'm saying? I need to know. Let me see if it's in here in the website. I got to go deeper. Well, I'll go deeper later. All right, Baba Rinoco. And also, you can call him at 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. Or Rinoco@hotmail.com. Rinoco, R-U-N-O-K-O, @hotmail.com. Habashah. Habashahincorporated.org. Habashah Incorporated. Habashah stands for helping establish schools at home and abroad. Habashahincorporated.org. And they're doing the outstanding work here in the Atlanta area, you know, and of course on the continent with the Kashi Project. The things that they do is Habashah Works,
black to our roots, sustainable seeds, golden growers, and urban green jobs. Just outstanding work, the Kashi Project. There's photos of what's happening in Ghana with the Kashi Project. It's looking great. There's also a program they have for repatriation. So check out HabashahIncorporated.org. HabashahIncorporated.org. The LEDGE program. LEDGE stands for the environmental. Okay, let me do this right quick. Thank you. And thank you, callers. I appreciate you really. You know I do. And I can't control. Sometimes you have background noise, and I just got to do that, okay? So they can hear me, and you can hear me, and we can hear each other. LEDGE, the Land for Development of Group Economics. Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. They have a raffle that they're offering, a safari, an Ashura, Tanzania, that is valued at $15,000. Go to theledgegroup.com. Theledgegroup.com. And of course, the LEDGE Group deals with the four areas for human existence: food, water, shelter, and clothing. And they have projects. They have 12 projects in 6 different countries, over 170 people employed, and over 260 members. They need more members. They need you to be a member of the ledgegroup.com. BB Toomey. ABIBITUMI. BBTUMI.com. BBTUMI.com. They have a number of things on the event schedule. One thing they have going on right this evening is the course that they're going to have on BB Toomey, Uncentered. It's Baba Baruti's course. It'll be given by Baba Baruti. It is tonight is the information that will provide us a free question and answer session, and is designed to discuss the upcoming Centered Building African Realities course. The course is specifically designed for warriors who already understand or have need to gain clarity about what comes with claiming ownership of an uncompromising commitment rooted in war. It is for those of us who are courageous enough to see where we have been and our condition in this reality through the eyes of our strongest ancestors. And it is for those Africans who, from this understanding, know that it is we who must fight to destroy what hurts us and rebuild what helps us, using every means and energy at our disposal in order to regain control over our story, our way, and our destiny. This course is about being African and nation building. It is about how to correctly, knowledgeably, politically, and practically define and create a reality that reflects the spirit of our ancestors in the face of a relentless, invasive, anti-African world. The syllabus, the class syllabus, we will be covering the material presented in the book Centered, Building African Realities. The first week, being African and African-centered. The second week, the concentric spheres model of African organization and access. The third week, African psychologies and typologies. The fourth week, the new African, escapism or true re-Africanization. The fifth week, building families within the center and the role of elders. So that's tonight. These are going to be on weekends, but tonight they have a briefing discussion, question and answer at 6 p.m. Eastern. 6 p.m. Eastern. Go to BB Atumi, ABIBITUMI, BBAtumi.com. Okay? ABIBITUMI.com, BBAtumi.com. Okay, there's another one, of course, for BB Atumi, and that is they have this weekend on the events. Just want to make sure you got that information right now on what's happening tonight, June 9th at 6 p.m. And if you go to bbatumi.com, that information will be there for you to just to click on. And then this Saturday, Seminar 19, African Spirituality, Concepts of the Person. The person has a multiple self. That is at 1 o'clock this Saturday from 1 to 3, from 1 to 3:30 it looks like, Eastern time from 1 to 3:30. And then on the 20th, Affirming Black Manhood. Affirming Black Manhood. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Okay, okay, okay. Affirming Black Manhood. And that will take place on the 20th, Sunday, June 20th, the day after Juneteenth Day, turning back the power to define, taking back the power to define and define and demonstrative of what black manhood is and needs to become. Baba Baruti is also on that particular program. Robert Walker, the host, is, so I can't get too much from this one here, and I can't click it. Oh. Well, I'll be talking more about it. It's a time. It's coming up. So, bbatumi.com. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta. I'm Ralph David Abernathy. It's across the street from Soul Vegetarian. Up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is open on Friday and Saturdays from 1 to 7, the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And, of course, Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, with delicious smoothies and fruit drinks and health drinks and pastries and all kinds of good stuff for you. And on weekends, they have catered vegan food. So Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located on Ralph David Abernathy. And if you want to give them a call at 404-444-1635, that's 404-444-1635. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Medu Bookstore. Mama Nia, as I said, she's open. Store looks great. Please, if you're in the Atlanta area, stop by the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Or give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. If she doesn't have the book that you're requesting, believe me, she'll get it for you. That is 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. And, okay. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, located in Lithonia. I just got finished talking to my good brother, Gazimde Ajamu, and he has some great things happening over at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Give brother Gazimde a call at 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. There is light in the Black Dot. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us, every Thursday night. The Thursday night broadcast begins at 9 p.m. on Thursdays. Us Lifting Us, Ulu, from 9 to 10 on Thursdays. If you want to call to listen, you can do that. Or you can call to ask a question or comment at 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. On the computer, of course, just go to blogtalkradio.com. blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road, Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. Call my sister, Shelly Amonset, at 404-434-7963. 404-434-7963. They have all kind of grooming things for your beard and so forth, incense, T-shirts, all kinds of good stuff at Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. Sister Gabrielle Rilia is doing outstanding work in the islands of Haiti, and she deserves to be supported. Go to her website at Sanjay-Haiti, Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sanjay-Haiti, and look at the beautiful work they're doing in areas of education, health, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. Sanjay-Haiti. Akaban Institute, Baba Baruti. I just mentioned Baba Baruti on a couple of programs that'll be on bbatumi.com. And of course, Baba Baruti is just doing outstanding work in educating. I gotta get that piece to read to y'all, because he has a thing for summer school. Shucks. So I got to find these things. I got to, you know what, Brother Oshie, write them down. Yeah, that's what I do. Because I mean, I have all this other stuff written in front of me here, because otherwise I couldn't remember all this. Shoot, you know that. But if you want to help Brother Rudy out, go to PayPal or Cash App. If it's PayPal or Cash App, the $ YAA, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, YAA, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And you can make your donations as you see fit to help Baba Baruti out. His books, I just mentioned Centered, which that program is going to be on. You can get that book from AkabinHouse.com. If you're not in the Atlanta area where the books are sold at the various places I just mentioned, the Shrine has books. The Medu Bookstore has his books. And Gazemde Ajamu at Black Dot has his books. And, of course, if you go to Baba Rudy's house, if you know him like that, like I do, you can go pick a book up at the crib. At his crib. But AkabinHouse.com, AkabinHouse.com to pick up Baba Baruti's. He's, like I say, he's a prolific writer. Appreciate him very much. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. June 8th, blood debts must be repaid in blood. Dr. Bobby Wright. There is no justice without a complete equivalent correction. Anything less is an insult and a disservice to those who were victimized by miscarriages of justice. And it should go without saying that the greater the miscarriage, the greater the insult and disservice. And believe me, this was a tremendous insult. This is Ma'at. Warriors must remember that one of the most important principles of Ma'at is balance. Accordingly, balance requires a return to order when imbalance occurs. Warriors enforce Ma'at. I repeat, warriors enforce Ma'at. They are the karma that has been sent to make whatever corrections are needed for our people to receive justice and return to Ma'at. And that return goes not to conform to others' desires to escape punishment. It does not return with us praying for their forgiveness and our forgetfulness. Lest we forget, these barbarians murdered hundreds of millions of innocent Africans in cold blood in order to steal our land and bludgeon the rest of us into a religious submission to their twisted, dehumanized, despiritualized, mentalcidal, anti-African interpretation of reality. Dr. Bobby Wright reminded us that blood debts must be repaid in blood. Nothing else will suffice in order for us to be returned. The Ma'afa, Urugu's ongoing acts of genocide, will not cease until justice occurs. And justice requires a return of order by no less than the equivalent reciprocity. Affirm, I am here to collect. Affirm, I am here to collect. June 9th, education must provide a means of social advancement for the African community. It should make Africans proud to own businesses, maintain two-parent homes, engage in global trade, govern their own communities. The public and private schools that are not African-centered will not give the African child the tools to build the African community or home. They cannot and will not teach African children to become empowered. The children will be taught to keep working for the system, which is disenfranchising them. That's what it does. That's by design. Instead of revolting against that system, i.e. Rayat. Politics are critical to this empowering education, and as i.e. Rayat clearly indicates, this is to be found in the mentality of racial accountability the children in centered communities are taught, which remains in the forefront of their thinking and every personal decisions for life. They must be guided into thinking deeper on even everyday decisions. Every choice they make must be based on its benefit or determined to, and it's, excuse me, every decision they make is a benefit or a detriment to African people. So they must understand that. For example, while the average conscious person knows to buy black, children embedded with a race first or culture first priority will go even further. They will have learned that calculated consumptions without racial accountability, cultural accountability, is only a pretense at power for the people. Their vision will far exceed any concerted support these individuals who simply look like them. They will know to asset, has the Jegna ancestor, Dr. Amos Wilson, explained. Whether or not the set of relationships of those who they buy from is at one with the priorities of African nation. So they will also need to know, in conclusion, in conclusive terms, the level of dedication the person from whom they make purchase from has to the African people. We must understand the commitment and dedication that we should have. I teach our children to empower themselves and us. I teach our children to empower themselves and us. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Trying to get myself together here, you know what I'm saying? Trying to get myself together. What do you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. Who's doing the telling? That's been our problem. We should only listen. I repeat, we should only listen to those who have African people's best interests at heart. And so therefore, what we will do for ourselves, what we know of ourselves, will speak to that. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your behavior pattern, and your behavior pattern determines your actions. It begins with what you think, your philosophy, and it ends with what you do. If your philosophy is that our sisters are, you know, the B words and all this old kind of madness and don't deserve any respect, how will you treat them? Exactly in that way. But if your philosophy is that our sisters are to be protected and respected, you will treat them with protection and respect. The same with the sisters towards brothers. It begins with what we think, but deeply it ends with what we do. And what we do sometimes, y'all, because of what we think, is just horrendous as it relates to African people. And that is our quest to do what is right for African people. We must not be the people who walked but left no footprints, who talked but had nothing meaningful to say, who labored but built nothing for themselves. And so we lay at your feet, the builder's spade and shovel, the mason's troll and square, Africa's books of wisdom. Go now and build for eternity. Brother Lester Velt Middleton. And you can go to YouTube and look at his interviews with some of our great scholars and historians, our warrior scholars and historians, Brother Lester Velt Middleton. And I told you this poem is even deeper because he literally built his home in North Carolina. He literally built his home, Brother Lester Velt Middleton. May the ancestors be pleased with him. Okay. Let me get this one here, and then we're going to get into this discussion with my guest. I was going to read this the other day, and I'm going to read this periodically like I do all these other ones. Because if there's something that I think that needs to be reiterated, even to the point that some say, this is redundant, this is repetitive. Well, no, it's positive reinforcement. There is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. Africa is the richest continent on the face of the earth. I repeat, Africa is the richest continent on the face of this earth. It has everything that we need to once again to put us back on the stage as a free and proud and productive people. Everything but us, because we don't have the right mind. There is no other historical instance of a formerly captive people, an enslaved people, who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. The brother who wrote The Sovereign Psyche, Brother Ezra Erhon. Man, I tell you. My guest today is Brother Mickey Dean. Brother Mickey Dean is the chairperson of the International Committee for the National Black United Front. He has been on this program numerous times, and I always enjoy our conversations, and I always enjoy some of the posts that he sends. Well, he sent one, and around the time of Memorial Day. And, of course, Memorial Day was co-opted by Caucasians because it used to be Decoration Day. And what that meant was that there was a mass grave of Caucasians who fought in the Civil War from Union soldiers, and our people dug them up and gave them a proper burial. That is the beginning of Memorial Day, you know? And what was interesting, a Caucasian was going to make that statement, and they cut his mic. I don't know if you've seen that on some of whatever, somebody sent it to you, whatever. Yep. And they cut his mic. Because you know why? Once again, just like them not wanting to deal with critical race theory, not wanting to deal with the 1619 Project. In the mortal words of the character, General Jessup, Nathan Jessup, of A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth. They can't. Brother Mickey Dean, how are you?
Hotel Brother Oshi, I'm doing well. You know my line. I'm doing good for a senior citizen.
That's right, brother. You keep on doing it. Yeah, buddy.
Always glad to be here with you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it so much. You sent me, you didn't send me, you sent out the piece on David Fagan. And that is spelled with an E, F-A-G-E-N, David Fagan. And of course, I started looking into it deeper. I was like, man, you know, this brother had courage, you know. He was being faced with these Caucasians. They were in this segregated, it was a Buffalo Soldier. That's what they called
him. Yeah, well, you know, the original Buffalo Soldiers, and I think we might get into that a little bit later, started out in the wars against the Native people, but
right.
Subsequent, all black squadrons were called Buffalo Soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And these regiments that developed at the turn of the 20th century were called Buffalo Soldiers. I think in the U.S. Army, there were four of them.
Right.
One was based in Tampa, where David Fagan was born. And one of the things I didn't know anything about David Fagan until just a few months ago. I mean, this brother was something that was new to me.
Sure.
And I just thought that Memorial Day was a good time to share it, since we were talking about war heroes. And I'm thinking, I can't think of a better war hero than this brother.
Right on. He was a deserter. He deserted our country.
Yeah,
he fought for the enemies.
If you want, I'll just tell a little bit of his story if you want.
Sure, please do.
Okay. Because what I understand about Fagan was that he was growing up in Tampa, and of course, this was, you know, during the height of Jim Crow. Reconstruction was over. This is the early part of the 20th century. And, of course, He grew up in a little place in outside of Tampa, where most of the black folks lived, and it was basically used. They were used as a labor force for these white developers that Tampa mm-hmm. was building. Well, this particular black infantry was based there, and a lot of the people, a lot of the brothers who came there were from places like California. And California, those brothers hadn't experienced the kind of virulent racism that we had here in the South. And so Fagan saw these guys, and he said, I don't know where they're from or what they're doing, but I want to be with them. I want to be like them.
Right on.
And so he ended up joining the U.S. Army in one of those regiments. And shortly after that, that regiment was shipped out to the Philippines. Now, one of the things that had been going on previously, you know, when all of the white folks left Europe, I mean, what was on their mind was colonization, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the United States later joined them in that colonization. Spain had colonized a lot of parts of what is parts of Central America and other places like Cuba and the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the Spanish-American War in the late 1800s, which was basically fought over those colonies. And so the Philippines was one of those colonies. The Spanish eventually conceded to the United States. And rather than liberating the people in the Philippines, the United States wanted the Philippines as a colony itself. And of course, the Filipino people had just fought against Spanish domination. So now they're fighting against American imperialism and the American attempt to claim the Philippines as its own. And so that's how that particular black regiment ended up in the Philippines. They were there basically to help suppress the Filipino fight for independence. And Fagan saw that. And it was a very brutal war. The Americans had much more firepower than the Filipinos. And they just killed and massacred a lot of civilians. And Fagan said, you know, this kind of looks like the way these crackers treat us in Florida. And there's just something right about this, you know. And so eventually he said that I'm not going to do this anymore. And as the story goes, he stole four pistols and a horse and rode off and joined the Filipino army. And I think during the course of that war, maybe another 20 or 30 brothers did the same. And so he joined the Filipino army. And actually fought in several skirmishes against the Americans. He became really very popular among the Filipino people. He rose up in the ranks in the Filipino army. Of course, this caught the attention of the United States government, and there were articles in the New York Times and other papers calling him a traitor, and there was eventually a bounty that was placed on his head. And he found out about this, and of course, he married a Filipino woman, as the story goes, and moved up into the hills. Supposedly, one of the bounty hunters saw him in a group of his wife and a group of Filipinos in the river bathing, and captured them and beheaded him and brought the head back and said, "I've captured David Fagan." There was never any proof that the head he brought back was the head of David Fagan. And so there were the story goes that even after that, people spotted David Fagan, and so there was never any confirmation of his death. But this was just an instance of where, you know, his brother said, I mean, it reminded me so much of Muhammad Ali when he said, you know, ain't no Viet Cong ever called me nigga. You know, I'm not going over to fight them people, you know. And Fagan was in a similar vein where he said, you know, why am I fighting to help conquer other people, you know, particularly non-white mm-hmm. people when, mm-hmm. in the way that this country treats me, you know?
Right.
And he said, I'm just not doing it. And so he took, as you mentioned, a very courageous stance and just said that, you know, I'm just not going to fight on behalf of the empire anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so he deserted, as they say, as they call it. I say he liberated himself, you know,
yeah.
and joined the Filipino army. So it's a fascinating story, and it's I was kind of surprised that, in a way, that I'd never heard of him before prior to a few months ago. But I just thought I would share that because I just thought it was a fascinating story.
I thought it was fantastic. In fact, when you first sent it, and I started doing some research on it too, and going to you know, some of the sources where you can get information from, i.e. Wikipedia. In fact, Wikipedia was interesting because they only had a small blurb about him, I guess because he was a deserter. They just said he was born in Tampa, Florida, da-da-da-da-da-da, and bam, that was it. And, of course, they mentioned the fact that this bounty hunter brought his decomposed head in and they couldn't verify it, and that that he lived. And I believe that's to be the case. He lived up in the mountains with his wife and created a new family. And he was, you know, idolized, you know, for his courage and his guerrilla warfare tactics against the United States, you know.
Yeah. There's a book, by the way, called David Fagan, Turncoat Hero. The subtitle of War So Evil, he chose to fight against it. I don't have the book. In fact, I just discovered it. But if anybody wants to know further information about it, it looks to be written from the perspective of showing Fagan as an anti-imperialist, not as a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think he said he titled it the Turncoat Hero, you know. And so it looks to be from a good perspective. Yeah. It's written by a guy named Philip Hoffman, H-O-F-F-M-A-N.
Okay.
And it's called David Fagan, the Turncoat Hero. I can't say I'm recommending it because I've not read it. So
right.
It's available.
Well, there's a lot out there. In fact, I caught this one piece from a Filipino that put it on YouTube, a video. It's not very long, so I'm going to go ahead and play that. Pretty much the same information.
Yeah, I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much the same information that you gave out. But just for the listening audience, I'm going to play this.
Okay.
Meet your next pillow. Why do we make our pillow in the shape
of a cube? Sorry for the commercial.
I'll tell you. The problem with pillows is that you're trying to fit a round...
Mabuhay, o in kamapangan luwid kayo. The month of February is celebrated as Black History Month here in the United States. So today, let us learn more about the heroic African-Americans and the Philippine-American War and the Filipino struggle for independence. Let's begin. At number one... If you're not familiar with it, the Philippine-American War was a bloody war and genocide that immediately followed the romanticized Spanish-American War. And according to Bishop Henry M. Turner, the Philippine-American War that began in 1899 was an unholy war of conquest. At number two, during the war, all African-American cavalries and black infantry regiments were sent to the Philippines to fight against the Filipino revolutionaries and their struggle for independence. Many African-Americans felt that fighting in the war would reflect favorably and enhance their recognition in the United States. And the American government at that time also believed that African-Americans were immune to tropical diseases. This belief was unfounded and was solely based on their racism against black and brown people. At number three, many in the black community were vocal in their opposition against the US invasion and occupation of the Philippines. Many of their newspaper articles and their leaders, such as journalist and early civil rights movement leader Ida B. Wells Barnett, supported the idea of Philippine independence. They strongly argued against the United States subjugating non-white people and against the beginnings of American imperialism. The African-American community understood very well the similarities of their struggle with that of the people of the Philippines. At number four, and it was not only the African-Americans who understood this interconnected struggle. The Filipino revolutionaries also exposed black soldiers in the Philippines with propaganda to discourage them from being the instruments of white supremacy against another people of color. They addressed the similarities of lynching and racial discrimination in the United States with the violence and the bloodbath that the Americans were unleashing in the Philippines. And as a result, at number five, many African-American soldiers defected and joined the Filipino revolutionaries. These black soldiers were welcomed and were well-respected within the Filipino movement for independence. Perhaps the most well-known of them was Private David Fagan, who would later become Captain Fagan in the Philippine Revolutionary Army. Captain Fagan became so successful in fighting the American soldiers that the U.S. government would later place a highly priced bounty on his head. The sentiments of African American soldiers in the Philippines is summed up in this quote from Sergeant Middleton W. Sadler, who wrote, "We are now arrayed to meet a common foe. Men of our own hue and color, whether it is right to reduce these people to submission is not a question for soldiers to decide. Our oaths of allegiance know neither race, color, nor nation." And another black soldier wrote, "The white man's prejudice followed the Negro to the Philippines, 10,000 miles from where it originated." In summary, black American soldiers felt closer sympathy and stood in solidarity with the brown people in their struggle, their common struggle, against white imperialism. So now what? Given the current social and political climate here in the United States, it is crucial for us Filipino Americans to stand in solidarity with other oppressed and marginalized communities. The African Americans had once shed blood to fight for our people's independence, for our freedom. It is only just and right that we stand beside them as they fight to be recognized and be respected as human beings in this land of the free. Because we, people of color, immigrants, refugees, minorities, we all deserve to be treated with dignity and with regard for our basic human rights. And that is it for me today. To learn more about this topic, check out the links in the video description below. And until next time, kita kits, orin kapampangan, Nikki Tix, bye!
Here we have
What am I doing here? Okay. I'm going to play another piece. I think it's more about who David Fagan was, and I'll play that after the break. And then we'll engage in some dialogue with Brother Mickey Dean, who's my guest today. And hopefully that if you're on the queue, you can just hit star twice to get in to give your questions or comments. And if not, you can dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I hope that, at least I can get this together here in the process. I'm trying to do some things here. Now, hopefully I didn't mess myself up. I'm going to go ahead and do this, and then by the time I'll have it ready for listening. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. That's not what I wanted to play of Pharoah Sanders. I wanted to play The Creator Has a Master Plan. Sounds okay on the computer. Just distorted on. Okay, I apologize about that, family. I really do. I apologize about that. But I wanted to play The Creator Has a Master Plan. I don't know if you've heard it and you haven't heard it in a while. I'm just going to do a favor because my good friend Mickey is a saxophone player. I'm going to go ahead and play a little bit.
Introducing the Grip 6
belt.
First,
I got to get back on this commercial.
The only belt on the market with a no gut pinch guarantee. The Grip.
This is Pharoah Sanders, Creator Has a Master Plan.
Look. Creator has a master plan. Peace and happiness to all the land. Peace and happiness to all the land.
On a base built, the great Johnson Newton, on a base built.
Happiness to all the land.
On drums, the great John Batch on the drums. My name is Pharoah Sanders. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. I'm having technical difficulties, but I'm trying to get through it. That was Pharoah Sanders. The creator has a master plan. it's a beautiful song and very progressive. Some people can't deal with progressive jazz. They like that soft jazz or that, what's that, fusion or something like that. But and I don't play it a lot on the program because of that, but I do. You know, it's my first wife, her brother, turned me on to jazz. He was a saxophone player. He liked Cannonball Adderley, loved Cannonball Adderley. And because of him, I became, very attuned to what was happening with jazz. In fact, in Milwaukee, in the early 70s, when he turned me on to jazz, this nightclub in Milwaukee was bringing jazz artists in. So I had an opportunity to see Charlie Mingus before he passed on bass, Stanley Turrentine, Freddie Hubbard on trumpet. I could go on. Pharoah Sanders and Rashawn Roland Kurt, you know. I mean, he's playing like, what, 5, 6, 7 different instruments. He got a clarinet up his nose. He got a saxophone. I'm serious. Yeah. Brother Mickey.
Yes, sir. By the way, Pharoah is one of my favorites. He came out of the Coltrane tradition.
Right.
And I just love those little impulse records that he did.
Yeah.
And, let us go into the house of the Lord. I would say is probably my favorite Pharoah piece, but I like a lot of his stuff. So
yeah, well, the first piece I was not familiar with. I'm familiar with the creator has a master plan. You know,
probably yeah, that's one a good
of his
piece. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's probably one of his more commercial kind of pieces. He's 80 years old, still kicking, still doing his thing. You know, and wish him continued good health. He's provided some good music for our people. You know, Pharoah Sanders. Yeah. So we're going to continue on with what we were dealing with, and that, of course, is the our brother, David Fagan. And like I said, I have another piece that I wanted to present. In fact, who was David Fagan? I'm going to play this. It's only a few minutes long, and then we're going to get off in the conversation. I hope that you'll stay with us, brothers and sisters, and give us some feedback. Here's a piece here. Once again, I got to get beyond the commercial.
Beheaded African American becomes a mythical figure in the Philippines. Let's learn more.
Mabuhay, Oren Kabamban, Luit Kayu. In my old video on the heroic African Americans in the Philippine-American War, I've mentioned the name of Captain David Fagan, and a lot of folks have since asked me more about him. So today, we will be learning a little bit more about the legendary Captain David Fagan. David Fagan was born in Tampa, Florida in the year of 1875. Nothing much is known about his early life, but by 1898, he was enlisted in the 24th Infantry Regiment, which at the time was one of only four regiments of African-American soldiers in the U.S. Army. By autumn of 1899, David Fagan and his regiment was sent to the Philippines and were thrusted in front of a bloody war. They set up camp near the Rio Grande de la Pampanga or the Indung Kapampangan River at the core of the Filipino Revolution and struggle for independence. The Philippine-American War had been raging since the beginning of 1899. The war between the United States and the Philippines broke out as Filipino patriots and revolutionaries fought vigorously to defend their independence, an independence that they had won in a revolution against Spain, but it was a freedom that was swiftly taken away by their American allies. David Fagan was at the front lines of the brutal and bloody offensive against the Filipino forces in central Luzon. But by November of 1899, David Fagan ran over to the Philippine army for sanctuary. He took refuge in the Filipino-controlled Mautarayat, or Bundukalaya, at the sacred, mythical heart of Indung Kapampangan, or what is now Central Luzon. He defected and was branded as a bandit and a traitor against the United States. But it was in his time with the Filipino people that he has shown true heroism and selflessness. His bravery earned him much respect and, more importantly, the trust of the Filipino people. He earned not just the respect and the admiration of the people, but he also quickly rose up the ranks. By 1900, the highly revered and valiant Kapampangan General Jose Alejandrino officially promoted David Fagan to the rank of captain. But better yet, he was referred to by the Filipino people as General Fagan or General Fagan. He was a gifted military officer who also spoke Tagalog. David Fagan would eventually marry a local lady, and his legendary exploits during the war would lead to mythical proportions, especially among the Kapampangan elders and the indigenous Aitas, many of whom referred to him as Pugut, a mysterious, mythical giant but friendly supernatural being. Branded as a bandit and frustrated by his legendary exploits, the American forces sought bitterly to end his life in whatever way possible. A bounty of $600, or about $18,000 in today's money, was offered to anyone who could bring his severed head to the Americans. By the end of 1901, a bounty hunter turned in what he claims to be the head of Captain David Fagan, but it was never really confirmed or verified. In fact, Captain David Fagan evaded countless attempts against his life, and sightings of him were reported here and there in the years following his official death. And all of these only added to the legend, the mystery, and the myth surrounding Captain David Fagan. But why would David Fagan switch sides? Why would he dare leave the all-powerful U.S. Army and join the scattered guerrilla forces of the Philippines in the jungle? The answer has a lot to do with racism. Yes, racism is real, both in American institutions and in the everyday life in the United States and beyond. Despite fighting for the United States in countless wars, African-American soldiers were treated terribly and were seen as disposable bodies. They suffered violence from their white superiors and were bitterly despised by their white fellow soldiers. Racism in the United States goes hand in hand with American imperialism overseas. The violence the Americans unleashed in the Philippines reminded many African Americans of their own experiences, from the atrocities of their past to the injustices of their present conditions. David Fagan was just one of the many African Americans who stood in solidarity with their fellow people of color against white imperialism. And just a reminder, this is by no means the complete story of Captain Fagan, and it's something that I'm still digging deeper into. But as I've mentioned before, given the current political and social climate here in the United States, it is crucial for us Filipino Americans to stand in solidarity with our fellow oppressed and marginalized communities. The African Americans had once shed blood for our people's freedom. It is only just and right that we stand beside them as they continue the fight to be recognized and be respected as human beings. Because we, black and brown people, also deserve
deserve to be treated with dignity and regard for our basic human rights, especially in this land of the free. So yes, do not be afraid to stand in solidarity with people who are also facing injustices. But it is also important for us to address our own anti-blackness in our own cultures and communities, because our people had respected one another and had once fought for each other's freedom. And it doesn't make sense that we just leave them hanging. And that is it for me today. If you like this video and if you learned a thing or two, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want...
And that's interesting what he said at the end, because of European Caucasian extremism, racism and privilege, white supremacy, and color consciousness. That's a problem globally. It's a problem in the Philippines. I know some Filipinos. You know, I know a brother who worked with me on the fire department, almost like a mail-ordered bride, no kidding, has a Filipino wife that he wound up going to the Philippines to get. He had wrote her, and they exchanged information. He went over there, and whatever. And the brother, the of course, the woman is very young, and he was older than me. So, Brother Mickey.
Yes, sir. You know, I just want to point out that the story of David Fagan is really not unique in the sense that throughout the history of the U.S. military, which has basically been a military of conquest and destruction, there's been many instances where, you know, brothers and sisters have said, I'm not going to fight on behalf of the empire.
Right.
And either went over to the other side, deserted, or whatever. You know, brothers and sisters have always acquitted themselves well in U.S. wars. I mean, there's no sign of cowardness and none of that. But sometimes when that consciousness comes up, you know, they say, look, you know, we're on the wrong side of this. And it takes a lot of courage to...
It really does.
To go over to the other side, because you know you're going to be condemned.
Yeah, it takes a lot of courage. And I give those brothers and sisters who defected and who went to the other side, who just didn't want to fight in an unjust war, you know, it reminded me of Muhammad Ali. I think you mentioned Muhammad Ali when he said, when he said, I'm not going to fight in your war, you know?
Yeah. And I know you remember because, you know, you're that age that I remember that, let me tell you one thing I remember about Muhammad Ali. When he lost that fight to Joe Frazier, I was in college at the time down in Georgia.
Mm.
The South Carolina state legislature invited Joe Frazier to come, and they gave him recognition for beating Muhammad Ali. And this is because Muhammad Ali, you know, didn't want to fight in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, later on when Ali became sort of feeble, then everybody loved him. You know,
right? I mean, then he became a beloved figure. But prior to that, I mentioned Muhammad Ali on this program numerous times because of my love and affection and admiration for Muhammad Ali, me growing up. And in fact, I boxed because of Muhammad Ali. I loved how he presented himself. I loved his brashness, his bold predictions and so forth. But when he joined the Nation of Islam, I really loved him. When he talked back to these Caucasians, and when he said this to those college students at one time, I ain't no draft dodging. I ain't burning no flag. I ain't running to Canada. I'm staying right here.
Yep.
I want you to send me to jail. Find me. You go ahead. You go right ahead. I've been in jail for 400 years. I could be for 4 and 5 more, but I ain't going no 10,000 miles to help murder or kill other poor people. If I want to die, I'll die right here, fighting you.
So you
my enemy. Not no Chinese.
You my opposer.
That's right. You my opposer when I want freedom. You my opposer when I want justice. You my opposer when I want equality. Want me to go somewhere to fight for you when you won't stand up for me for my religious beliefs?
Yeah, but that Fagan tradition, and I think I mentioned on that Facebook post, one of the incidents that I recall was during the so-called American Revolutionary War against the British.
Mm-hmm.
And there were about 20,000 enslaved Africans that ran to the British to join the British,
right?
And said, you know, we know what's going to happen if the Americans win, and I think the British promised them freedom,
right?
You know, if they join, and of course the Americans won, and we know what happened, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole episode was the impetus for Francis Scott Key writing the third verse of the national anthem, you know, the
mm-hmm.
anthem that all stand up and put our hands with our hearts and sing it.
Yeah.
You know? Because what he was doing was blasting the enslaved Africans for going over to the side
That's
of
right.
the British, you know.
And, he said, "I'll kill you too. No harling of the slave. Yeah. I'll kill you too."
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't. You know, a lot of people don't get to that verses in that anthem, but you know. And I was you know, during the Vietnam War, at that time, one of the ways that people stayed out of getting drafted was going to college, which I thought was very racist, you know, because mm-hmm. that protected a lot of these white boys.
Sure going. Did.
But there were some of us who went to college and as a result, you know, we didn't get drafted. But I had friends who were drafted, and of course, you know, brothers were overrepresented on the front line, and a lot of brothers resisted, you know, even in Vietnam. I used to hear about fragging, you know, I mean, actually taking these grenades and doing away with their racist commanders and so forth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's always been resistance. Some of the American involvement on behalf, I mean, blacks involvement on behalf of the empire were not so glorious. I mean, we glorify the Buffalo Soldiers, but we have to keep in mind that, you know, a large part of their task, the early version
right,
of the
was
Buffalo
killing indigenous
soldiers,
people,
was to wage the war against Native Americans.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And so that really wasn't so glorious. And you know, the Tuskegee Airmen, they supported the empire in World War II. That's not to say that these brothers weren't courageous, but you know, I think we have to look at these efforts in the broader context. So I think we should highlight people like David
and no doubt
and brothers that really said, mm-hmm. "I'm just not going to fight on the side of this empire anymore."
Because see, they push and promote those who did favor for the empire, those who would work diligently and gave their life for the empire, while the empire did nothing for us, while
right.
continued to discriminate against us, make us second-class citizens, never offered any kind of restitution for all the evil things that they've done to us, continue to deny our humanity, take our language, tradition, culture, and religion, all of those things, and yet we're supposed to just be putting our hands over our heart. We too sing America. Hell no.
Nope.
No.
I tell people I haven't stood up for that song.
No.
I think the last time I stood up for that song, I was in high school.
Yep.
But once I got to college, you know, and I came along during the height of the Black Power movement, and that's when, and I didn't know about that third verse, but what I knew was that this was a song basically standing up for U.S. imperialism, and
mm-hmm.
I decided that I wouldn't do that, and I've stood for that song, man, in 50 years.
Never. You know, what I would do on the fire department when they played, I just hang my head, stand in attention,
mm-hmm.
ain't saluting, ain't putting my hand over my heart, I'm just hanging my head, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Any other kind of time that the thing, I don't even like listening to that shit, excuse me, I don't even like listening to that sugar honey iced tea on sporting events, on TV. I turn the channel and then come back later. I detest it, you know? And then, of course, since the situation with Colin Kaepernick, you know, and then Donald Trump, who exacerbated it with his ignorance, you know, no way in hell would I ever.
Well, you know, the NFL made a point of, and in fact, you know, it came out a few years ago that they were being paid by the Department of Defense.
To
drum up patriotism.
That's
during,
right.
You know, during, you know, the NFL. NFL just went deep in
mm-hmm.
this whole patriotism thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and at one point I did know how that tradition started of playing the national anthem before sporting events, but I forgot. I don't know if you remember or not, but it started, you know, several years ago, and I, there was a rationale for doing it. And I don't know whether it was a drum up patriotism for one of the wars that the country was involved in or not, but it's kind of a tradition now. And,
no doubt.
That I wish they would do away with.
Yeah, no doubt. In fact, in high school, and I was in high school at that time, in the mid to late 60s, we never stood up. I remember one of my favorite documentaries is Wattstack. Wattstack, when Stack Records out of Memphis went to L.A.
Right.
to put on a concert to benefit Watts, who was in a riot 5 years previous. This is, Wattstack is 1972, which, of course, are coming up on the 50th anniversary next year, and I'm definitely going to do something, you know, around that, no doubt. Because I love watching
that. Yeah, I understand that. There's some type of documentary that's supposed to commemorate that I've been hearing about. I'm not sure yet, but I've been hearing about it.
Okay, okay. Well, there's a great documentary on Wattstack that was filmed at the time, you know.
Right.
And what's interesting is that they got Kim Weston. Kim Weston did Lift Every Voice and Sing, but she also did the anthem. And so,
right.
Because she did the anthem first, and you see people sitting down, ain't nobody getting up. You know, they eating, they talking, you know, and it's going on. This is good. You know, I loved it. And then, of course, when Jesse Jackson said, stand up for the Black National Anthem, everybody stood up, fist raised. You know, she only did the one stanza, but how she did it. In fact, that recording of her was played at many events in our community because you could buy that. So on a 45, you could buy that or on tape, and you could and people would play that. You know, Lift Every Voice and Sing that Kim Weston did, you know, and it was just interesting. And like I said, you know, it's hard for me as a born again African, as somebody who's raised in consciousness since those 60s and gone and done what I've done and did what I did to come to the realization of who we are as African people and not, you know, and then stand up for that. Never, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a staunch Pan-Africanist.
You know, I know I've taken some abuse for that over the years, but one of the things about after that whole Kaepernick episode, and especially when more and more knowledge came out about this third verse and about Francis Scott Key being a ultimate racist, a supporter of slavery and all of that, I mean, I think more and more sisters and brothers are now saying, wait a minute, you know, why am I standing for this?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And now I know even when I go to like high school events, you know, when they play the anthem, I'm always sitting down. But I noticed, and this was before the pandemic, and that shut me out from these things, but more and more sisters and brothers are saying, I'm not taking my hat off. I'm not standing
up.
You know, and the truth of the matter is that a lot of white folks that claim to be so patriotic, you know, if you go to a major league sporting event and you just happen to be out around the outside of the stadiums or inside the stadium but outside the field while they playing the national anthem, these white folks walk around talking, laughing, whatever, you know. They make clothes out of the flag. I mean, they got no respect for that flag, you know. Maybe some of them old veterans, they shed a tear or something like that. But, you know, a lot of these white folks ain't got no respect for the flag. But if they see Kaepernick kneeling, you know, they just get all enraged about that.
Right. Or anybody else disrespecting our flag, you know, and that's what Trump did when he jumped on Colin Kaepernick and made an issue of that. And he made it into the disrespect for the flag as opposed to bringing the attention of what's happening to us in this country, which is what the bottom line was. And so his thing was, no, you disrespect. You're supposed to stand up, salute, you know, put your hand over your heart, shut up, and then sit your ass down, you know, and not complain. In fact, it's to the such degree that they want you to believe that you should be thankful that you're here in America, the land of the free, home of the brave. You should just be thankful that you have the opportunity that you have to do whatever. You know, see, that's...
And
Go ahead.
Now, I said one of the things that I wanted to point out to, particularly in respect to Memorial Day, because, you know, Memorial Day, if you're on social media, you see a lot of people posting pictures of their family members, you know, who served. And I wanted to make sure that you know, even though I'm supporting people like David Fagan, I'm not attacking sisters and brothers that served in the military. You know, my dad served in World War II. And I know a lot of my contemporaries that went to Vietnam, I mean, went to the Army during that time. I mean, you know, we've been shut out of so many other opportunities that in many cases, the military was
the only option. The only option.
Brothers had to get away and to do something and, you know, and to try to, you know, get some money for college or whatever.
Exactly.
So it's not like, you know, people had in mind, I got to go support, you know, America,
right,
go fight these Vietnamese or anything like that. So I'm not downing, you know, sisters and brothers that for whatever reason, you know, felt they had to go serve. But I distinguish between, you know, the sisters and brothers who did that and the military brass and the role of the U.S. military. I separate mm-hmm. that from, you know, these regular sisters and brothers who were just, you know, looking for an opportunity.
Right.
So.
Because that's basically, I would venture to say the majority of us just needed, because we couldn't be in a society all that we could be. Has that Army right. commercial said, be all that you could be. So we tried to go into the service to try to be something, to come out at least with some benefits, educational benefits, housing loans, and so forth, medical, you know, because we don't have it in a society. And honestly, I'm always very surprised that many of the brothers and sisters who served in the military, who came out with better clarity and sanity historically and culturally. I really am. There's some people that I know that have been in the service. They're beautiful men and women. I mean, Baba Baruti was in the service. You know, Brother Black Panther, Ben Njai was in the service. Brother D, these are men who, you know, you would think because of their conscience and how they present themselves that they wouldn't have been in the service, not in the service to the United States, you know. But they're disciplined men. And I know probably some could argue, well, they got some of that discipline from the service. Maybe so, you know. But the bottom line is these are conscious individuals. They're historically conscious. They're Pan-Africanists. They're staunch Pan-Africanists. They believe in that, you know. But yet they did serve in the service. And like I said, some did that because of the benefits that they could get. They could go to school, you know.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to me, service to America, when you know the history of America and the history towards us, that's why, you know, even today when they make no bones about not teaching you about your history, not wanting to talk about Tulsa, not wanting to talk about so-called critical race theory, not wanting to talk about what happened in 1619, a constant denial of who you are. You know, I don't want my children to learn that we were bad. No, Mom, you was bad. You were bad.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
They cannot handle the truth. They cannot.
Yeah, there's a full scale assault now on black folks. And I mean, whether it's voting rights, whether it's you know, trying to promote these racist curricula in schools. I mean, these folks are really feeling threatened right now. And I don't put anything past them at this point. So we better be prepared as black people for anything.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I mean, to me, the bottom line is close ranks, pull resources, and let's get out. Just like that movie, Get Out.
Yeah.
Because there is no future for African people. Now, I understand there's some of us who just believe so much. You know, I even saw Negroes on YouTube arguing against critical race theory. They didn't know what the hell it was, but they were just arguing against it because of, you know, it was a threat against Massa, you know.
There's a
threat against this great democracy, you know, this fallacy, this damn, you know.
Well, you know, one of the tactics of the ruling elite and the ruling class, and this is the case historically and really around the globe, is that they really need a buffer class in between themselves and the masses, a buffer class to keep the masses under control.
That's right.
And so I mean, can you imagine, you know, if you look at all of the black people who managed to get positions in some of these corporations, et cetera, can you imagine what would happen if everybody had just been denied opportunities and the radicalization of the whole black population, what
right.
would happen.
Exactly.
So, you know, the white folks are smart. You know, hey, we got to let some of these folks in here.
Exactly.
So that others can aspire to get to where they are.
See, you know?
And
too.
They ain't going to get there.
Right.
You know, but we just want them to have those aspirations. So that buffer class is always a critical part of of our oppressors' tactics, yeah. And we just have to recognize it for what it is. You know, that sometimes them people ain't going to be on our side.
No, and that's why I'm against the so-called bourgeoisie. I'm against those who so-called, quote, sing America. You know, I'm against that because of what it has done to us and what it keeps us and where it keeps us at. We're in a terrible damn position in the history of us as an African people globally. Because of that, we cannot get ourselves together. I just read that piece by Errol Hone, you know, that said that, you know, and I'm going to read it again right now, Mickey. I'm going to read it again because it's a dynamite piece. You know, he says, there is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland.
Yep. Yep. That's a great quote.
It is. It is dynamic because, you know, that's our situation. That's our situation. Because we have been trained to believe in the goodness of America. We've been trained to believe that. You know, and as a consequence, it is to our detriment. Because what America has done is it has fragmented us as a people, our family situation, us as men and women, homosexual. Wow, I could go on. All of the bad things that has happened to us because we have embraced this madness.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I don't do is, and I think that those of us who call ourselves having a certain amount of consciousness, we have to be very careful about denouncing our people who've not reached that point yet, because you have to understand that there's been a tremendous job done on us. I mean, I can go back to what I used to think before I was enlightened.
Right. Yep. You know? So I agree.
I think our role, rather than condemning people, is to continue to enlighten people. Now we've got those folks that have gone on the other side, okay, and there ain't no saving them. You know, they just decided that they're gonna take a stand with our oppressors because it benefits them. They're making a good living. The oppressor pay them well, you know, to stand in the way. But the masses of our people have just been miseducated, and it's our role to try to do some uplifting rather than condemning.
I agree. But to me, those who need to be called out, you call them out for who and what they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know. And one other thing, Brother Oshie, while I got this opportunity, slightly off the subject, but this documentary, I don't know if you've seen it, Exterminate All the Brutes.
No doubt. I've talked about it on the program last month.
Okay, good.
I've seen all four episodes at least twice, and I'm going to see it again and further talk about it. I push and promote that documentary and Great Pyramid K, 2019,
right.
Who built the pyramids and how they were built. These two documentaries must be watched by us and understood. Raul Peck did, I think, an outstanding job in these two documentaries.
Yeah.
And also, too, Raul Peck lived this. You know, he's Haitian.
Yeah, because he intertwined his own personal story into the documentary. You know, interesting.
Yeah, he lived this. This is something, it wasn't something that he read. Or research. No, he physically lived this. He lived in Haiti during Baby Doc and Papa Doc and Aristide. He lived in the Congo with Mobutu when he was there. He lived it. He lived in Germany. He lived in Germany in the talk of, you know, what happened to European Jews. So, I mean, he lived this, you know, and he got the book Exterminate All Brutes from Swin Lundquist, who had died a couple years ago, you know.
Yeah.
And that was taken from some Caucasian who talked about, he said, well, forget it, kill all the brutes. Kill all the, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's what it is. Yeah. And he said it deals with three things. That is civilization, colonization, and extermination. That's what the Europeans have done. That's who they are.
That's why I say that you know, we got to be careful. Mm-hmm. You know, who are we trying to integrate into? Because you know, these this is a different breed of folks.
Yeah,
brutal,
yeah.
And they have proven it historically And I don't know why people think that they're going to change now.
Right. You know? Well, see, so, Dr. King said it toward the end of his life when Harry Belafonte, right. he said, I believe I'm trying to integrate our people into a burning building, you know?
Yep, yep.
Into something that, I mean, this is crazy. Then he also said, the greatest prevaricators of violence in the world is the United States.
Yep.
It's my country.
That's why I play that speech every King's birthday that morning. I play Why I Oppose the Vietnam War. I just think it's one of the most powerful messages.
Yeah. They are the greatest prevaricator of violence in the world. But that's not just United States. That's European people, period. That is their human, that is their evolutionary human development, to be violent. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always said, Mickey, you know, that the European, the Caucasian, the white man has always found a better way to kill your ass, you know?
Yep. They have perfected death.
Yeah, they have perfected death. They always found, mm-hmm. I mean, now even today with the technologies that they have, I mean, you know, they could kill me right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They could mm-hmm. literally kill me, a drone strike, blow this building up. I mean, they could do any and everything. I'm not afraid. Yeah. I'm not scared, you know? I ain't bending, bowing, and scraping. You know, I'm trying to get our people to look at leaving this situation. For those who want to stay, you go ahead and stay. But we need to go kick the Chinese out, kick the Arabs out, kick the Caucasians out, kick those Negroes out, those neocolonials out, and manage African land. It is the only answer. Pan-Africanism is the only answer for us as a people. Pan-Africanism or perish. Unify or die.
I think that's the ultimate.
That's the ultimate goal.
A unified, liberated, revolutionary Africa for African people.
That's the
ultimate answer.
Yes, it is.
You know,
it's the ultimate answer. And a lot of times we are afraid to deal with the question, let alone the answer. We don't even want to ask the damn question. You know, because we're trying our best to affect public policy. We're trying our best to make sure we secure our voting rights. You know, even when you look at what's happening now, you can see clearly, y'all, even though the Republican Party is whack and what they've done, but it is happening across this country, you know?
Yeah.
And
a lot of our people are like, you know, they're like Brother Malcolm said, where are you going to find a better white man than this? You know,
yep.
I mean, yeah. you know, and, yep. and so why we leave, Ron, what are you talking about, man? Where are you going to find a better white man than this? You know,
where are we going to go? Said,
yeah. You know, the field Negro said anywhere but here.
That's
you know,
right.
So.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere but here. You know, but that you're right. You're right. But that's that training, you know?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think we have to understand that. And we have to, I mean, that's why I like working with young people. I mean, we've got to be the ones to educate our young people, liberation education. I mean, we can fight these school systems and we've done it, you know, I mean, these public schools, but we just got to have our own institutions. Ultimately,
right.
You know, so.
Right. Right. And see, that's the thing, is the educational piece. We need African-centered schools, independent African-centered schools, where mm-hmm. we control the curriculum. We control who teaches it. You know, I mean, what y'all did in Kansas City, man, was so beautiful. It was so beautiful, you know, and even to this day, in fact, that dude that Malefi Asante helped bring to Kansas City to destroy it, that Negro took a position when I first moved here to Atlanta with the DeKalb school system. I didn't know when a school board meeting was, but I wanted to go because I called Brother Ajamu. Because, you know, to me, you, Brother Ajamu, all you brothers and sisters from the Kansas City chapter of MBUF, y'all are, you know, your integrity is beyond reproach. You brothers and sisters are beautiful. I love what y'all have done. You're the strongest chapter, along with Houston, in the National Black United Front, and you have truly affected change. You brothers and sisters, through the legislature, through the school board, established an African-centered school, high school, middle school,
elementary. It even had an administrative building, you know, and y'all did it, and it was taken from y'all because of evilness and jealousy.
I don't even like to think about that much anymore.
I know you man, don't, but, man. You know, I know. I'm sorry.
But the key to those things is to learn the lessons. You know, learn the lessons. And continue to move on. Once you have those setbacks, if you don't learn from, then it's really a setback. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I hate to bring it up, man, but it's just as for y'all, it is also for me because having a meeting there, seeing what is possible. I remember we're going with Brother Samari, driving me around. He said he showed me because Samari lives in that area, doesn't he?
Yeah. Him and the Jamu both don't stay very far from there.
Yeah, so he showed me the school. He showed me the buildings and everything like that. Man, I was so proud. And when we had the convention there, you know, man, so proud. And it's a damn shame.
We'll keep fighting, man. We've got a young group of leaders, and you know, this is a ongoing struggle, brother. That's why they call it a struggle.
That's right. It's ongoing, man. It's constant. It's consistent, and it's eternal. I mean, both of us will be, you know, passing on soon. You know, we make our transition, and we
don't say that, man. Don't say soon.
Yeah, I shouldn't say soon. You're right. I should have put that word in there. But both of them make our transition somewhere, damn, way down the road. But at that time,
okay, there you go. At that time,
at that time when it does happen. We want to be sure, and we don't feel good about those young people coming up to continue on that struggle with an African-centered mindset, you know, believing in us, you know, for sure.
And we just want to be able to say we did our part.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's why I do this radio program, man. That's my contribution.
Yeah. It's trying to excellent outpost, man. Yeah. To hear something real, man. Yeah.
Yeah, because I, like I said, you know, that's my contribution. I love us. I fell in love with Africa and Africans.
It comes through, Brother O'Shea. I just want to tell you, it comes through. There ain't no doubt.
Well, listen, Brother Mickey, I know I'll talk with you. You know you're going to be back on. We'll come up with some other area. Maybe we talk about jazz, man. You know. Yeah, talk about
it's
your.
Always a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure.
Talk about your exploits with the horn. But I know too. I know we got a convention coming up, MBUF convention, October. The caravan to the ancestors in Houston and Galveston. Things that are coming up. Also too, the opportunity now to meet in person because of, you know, the although I think that coronavirus is somewhat of it still there, but you know, still fortify yourself. You know, prepare yourself, make sure you're healthy, make sure you're taking the necessary vitamins and so forth, whatever you got to do to stay safe, man.
That's what I'm trying to do, bro.
Right on. Brother Mickey Dean, I thank you. My guest has been Brother Mickey Dean, who is you're the national chair. He's the international chairperson for international.
No, I'm not anything now. I'm just an elder trying to give the benefits of whatever little wisdom I have.
Right on. I don't hold no position. I love it, don't you? I love it. I have to go to no means if I don't want to. I love it. I love it too. Thank you, Brother Mickey Dean.
Anytime, brother. You know that.
You know it. Peace. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Vahodie. Bibi Vahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Hope to see you on Friday when my guest will be Brother Chief Igumawali from Tulsa, Oklahoma, with some very good information on what's happening after commemoration of Black Wall Street. You want to check that out this Friday. All right, family. Peace.